Today's program is brought to you by Junior's. You have not really lived until you've had cheesecake at Junior's. For more information, visit juniorscheesecake.com.
I'm Erica Weitz, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to the main course on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I am Alexis McLaughlin, your host, and very excited to have in studio with me April Wachtel. April is a 20-year veteran of the restaurant and cocktail industry, and we're here to talk a little bit about her most recent project, which is Swig and Swallow.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Swig and Swallow is your most recent project. You are the founder and CEO, and it's really interesting kind of concept.
Thank you.
So I guess we'll just dive right in if you want to tell us a little bit about what you guys do.
Yeah. So Swig and Swallow, it's a cocktail batching delivery service. We are serving the five boroughs in New York City. So basically what we do is it's business to business, and we take custom cocktail recipes and we scale them for events of every size. We don't add the alcohol, but we do tell our clients how much alcohol to add to each vessel.
Can you explain cocktail batching for folks that maybe have an experience?
Is it
a newer concept? I've only come across it in the last 5 years.
I actually don't know kind of what the origin is. Like, I don't know what the timeline is of the first person batching. I assume that this dates back to really when people started preparing punches, and this is, we're talking hundreds of years ago. But the idea is that you add all the elements of the beverage in one large quantity, and then you're able to, I guess, pour individual servings off from that. So in kind of the contemporary times, what you use this for is when you're throwing a large event, for example, and you have a couple of featured cocktails or multiple featured cocktails, it is very difficult, without knowing the skill of the bartenders, without knowing the venue itself, it's very difficult to bring new custom cocktail recipes to the venue and say, hey, I want you to make this 6-ingredient cocktail, you know, for large volumes of people very quickly and get it right.
Yeah, consistently, so, which is always a problem.
Exactly. So for consistency purposes, what people typically do, and this could be bartenders, it could be consultants, or it could be, you know, consulting groups where they hire a bunch of bartenders to come help them do this, is you'll batch all the ingredients together, including alcohol, fresh juices, custom syrups, etc., into massive vats, and then from there you separate that off and distribute it into carafes or into liter bottles with speed pourers and things for individual service.
It's kind of surprising to me that this service hasn't really been popular or really exists before. Because essentially what you're doing is you make a premix, you know, everything needed, like ready to go, ready to pour drink. Mm-hmm. And then there's no more work needed.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if you kind of just look at the whole beverage industry, you see there's ready to serve drinks, which are, you know, either there's a lot of preservatives or they're, you know, the mixers themselves have zero connection with. So if it says like, orange, ready to serve orange drink, the chances are that there's actual orange in there is very low, right? These are like shelf stable products. There's like zero refrigeration. It's like, you know, it'll be fine for 100 years on the shelf. So you see that end of the spectrum where it's very common, right? And then on this end of the spectrum, again, you see within the cocktail world, within the world of people who actually care about fresh products, you do see people doing this for every single event. I also have been curious why somebody has not started a service like ours where we operate from a commercial kitchen and then, again, batch all the product there and then deliver it to the venue. So I'm not entirely sure why it hasn't existed thus far, but I would say that in my experience, actually throwing this type of event to be able to minimize, the opportunity for error that occurs typically, again, with organizing a zillion deliveries from different vendors who are delivering you know, for let's just say a daiquiri, some people are delivering limes and some people are delivering sugar. And if one of those deliveries gets held up, all of a sudden you're unable to batch these cocktails and all of a sudden you're hours behind and then you're not prepared when your guests come and then chaos ensues. So, so for me, you know, in part, this was, I started this because of my own experiences needing a service like this and wondering why it didn't exist.
Yeah, you have, I mean, you obviously come to this conversation with a lot of experience and knowledge. How is that translated? I mean, you obviously have the drink down and creating the, you know, creating different recipes. Mm-hmm. How is that translated into starting a business?
Maybe if I just say a teeny bit about the various experiences that I've had,
then
kind of incorporate it. I've been in food and beverage for about 20 years. 17 of those were in restaurants. 12 of those 17 were bartending. I've also been a buyer, you know, bar manager, beverage director before. And so knowing that side of the business has been certainly very helpful, especially as calculating costs for this sort of thing. I also worked for spirits companies for a number of years. And so I think understanding the expectations that the spirits clients and the PR agencies and such have is really helpful. What else? Also, I've been teaching cocktail classes for about 5 years. So at Astor Center, Institute of Culinary Education, Haven's Kitchen, Murray's Cheese, and a chef demo kitchen called Audrey Claire Cook in Philadelphia. So pulling together that consumer conversation where people are constantly, you know, saying, oh, I absolutely want to make these at home. And then you say, oh, well, you know, you've got to have like a lime available. And they're like, but I don't want to squeeze it. You know, I think being able to see that perspective has been really helpful informing, you know, kind of how I'm trying to sculpt this brand. And I've definitely made some mistakes so far. So, so that's good. That's good too. But again, it's an iterative process. And, I think being able to bounce the idea off friends, even as a single founder, but being able to bounce these ideas off people in these various elements of this community has certainly been helpful to sculpting this company.
What has been your greatest challenge in starting a business?
It has definitely been doing this alone. I do now have a partner, Cocktail King of Logistics, but that's more on an executional level. So still the kind of, the brand building and the vision aspect is all me. And I can definitely say doing this in a vacuum, sometimes you're like, am I absolutely insane right now? Because I might be, and I don't actually know until I get somebody's reaction. So I think that's been very challenging. As part of that, kind of on a more practical level, some days you look at your to-do list and everything is incredibly important. And I think everybody in every job knows that to be a reality. But it can definitely be, immobilizing is like the wrong word for it, but it can definitely present another type of challenge when you say, there's 25 things on this to-do list, and I don't know which one is going to get me to a better place or to a more advantageous place the quickest. And so you just kind of put your head down and you just try to bust through all of it. Hoping that there will be an obvious way to get feedback about that in a couple days, maybe in a week, maybe a couple weeks.
Has there been anything that's really surprised you that you found that you enjoyed that you didn't know before?
About which aspect?
I guess just, you know, starting a business, building a brand, because this is, you know, it's more than just the logistics of operating a business, which it sounds like you have a lot of experience with, you know, on the back end, but you're now building an entire brand, visuals. I know that the logo design you did yourself without any background. How is diving into that? It seems daunting, to say the least.
Well, you know, that's actually, I do think that has been the most rewarding part of this is, like, when I'm actually identifying, okay, I need a new logo or I need to, you know, build a website that communicates X, Y, and Z, being able to see the project from concept to, I guess, really to product, whichever product, again, in this case, I'm talking about the website or the logo. I think being able to see that project from start to finish has been incredibly rewarding, as well as the fact that in that in the process of executing that project, you've acquired that skill, which you'll never fully forget, even if it's out of practice. So that has been really amazing. Like, I knew nothing about photography. I'm teaching myself about photography to showcase, you know, what I think this product actually is. So it can produce really beautiful drinks. That's hard for people to conceptualize when, you know, they just see an image of our jug as people are outing alcohol. You know, it's like, it's tough for people to see it without you showing it to them.
What do you mean jug? Will you describe like how the drink actually gets to the person, or when they order, what exactly are they ordering, and what gets delivered? How do they use it?
Right. So, basically the service that we provide, you know, people will say, hey, I have an event Tuesday at 6 p.m. There's 100 people coming. What do I need to do? Or I need cocktails. And you say, okay, well, how many cocktails do you want? So there's a consultation portion. How many cocktails do you want? This is what we would guesstimate for consumption. And then we can either select from existing recipes. We can create custom recipes if people would like us to do so. Or if they have provided us with a recipe, we can take that and scale it. And ultimately what they get is they're going to get jugs that are they're basically half full. It depends, obviously, on the proportion of the cocktail.
So you can add the booze.
Exactly. So, yeah, so one of the biggest challenges about actually, you know, batching large quantities of drinks at these various venues is you have to bring your own cambros with your own large containers to batch all the alcohol into. And I can tell you that this is probably the one very stupid little detail that messes everybody up if you're unprepared on this is you don't have enough vessels. And then so all of a sudden you've got you know, six giant vessels perfectly filled.
Is a cambro a bucket style?
Yeah,
is that what I call a Lexan?
Yes. Yeah. So it's basically like a square bucket. At least the ones that we use are square. They also have round ones.
Yeah. So it's like filling it to the top with your juice portion of your booze drink and not leaving room for the booze.
Exactly.
Also, that doesn't to get it out of a cambro doesn't really seem
it's not
practical.
Easy for service at all. Correct.
Okay.
So, yeah. So basically, we do that portion in the commercial kitchen, but then we measure it with enough space to add the alcohol into plastics, recyclable jugs. And so we'll say there's a sticker that we put on the side that says add X number of ounces or 1.5 or 1.75 liters or 750s. And we have space for both of those because obviously people are ordering different size bottles of whatever product it is. And then it'll say shake or, you know, pour directly over ice, and then we'll say garnish with an X, you know, garnish with a lime wheel, you know, orange twist, whatever it is. So there's multiple reasons we didn't want to add the alcohol prior. Firstly, I just don't even want to get into dealing with the insurance and the legality around transporting alcohol. I'm just totally disinterested in that aspect. But also, with this particular clientele, spirits companies are going to acquire their alcohol in a bunch of different ways. They could bring it in, depending on the venue. They might order it through the venue. Catering companies, again, another section of our clientele, typically have their preferred brands that they use anyway. And so it doesn't make any sense for me to say, you must use these six brands because that's what we offer, even though they've already got their costs calculated mm-hmm. for their menus that they propose with their existing brands. So it just seemed like, okay, this is the hard part of it, doing the correct proportions and ensuring that it's easy to complete the batch. But it's literally, I mean, we have a number of clients who regularly have their promo people, just, you know, people who are not cocktail, they don't have cocktail backgrounds, who literally are just adding the batch there, and then they can either, again, they can just shake, and pretty much everybody can shake a shaker tin, right? Or, again, they can pour directly over ice, and we are able to add dilution ahead of time should the client desire that.
Mixing part A with part B.
Exactly.
And producing a nice result, which is really interesting to have, and it kind of turns, you know, the showmanship of having a good product there, a good cocktail, something different. And, you know, we haven't really mentioned the word craft cocktail, mm-hmm. but essentially that's what's being created. That word, I don't know why it gets
loaded
at me a little bit.
Yeah.
Craft cocktail. It's the artisanal olive oil mm-hmm. of 2016, mm-hmm. 15.
Well, just to go off on a little bit of a tangent, it is interesting when you kind of talk about batch cocktails versus craft, or, you know, do these two things overlap? You know, I always have this conversation, certainly with my beginner students, that if you're looking for a way to elevate your cocktails from, you know, mediocre to very good, or from good to very, very good, fresh juice is really the way to go. And obviously you're not going to be using fresh juice in a straight spirits cocktail like a Manhattan or an old fashioned. But really, I can assure you that most of America does not use fresh juices when they're making cocktails. Right. So that's already a great starting point. But it's also interesting because this idea of batching, it's not just for events. Pretty much any, I'm trying to think if there's any exceptions that I know of. I would say most craft cocktail places that I know batch some portion of the elements that they use in their drinks, because I personally believe we are at this point where people want the highest quality product, but they literally don't want to wait 20 minutes to get their drink. And so, for example, some institutions batch just the bitters. So let's just say you're in a specific recipe, you're using a single dash or a dash and a half of three different types of bitters. They'll batch those beforehand and then just do three dashes of that batched bitters. So there's ways that you can batch elements of it without batching perishable items with non-perishable items, for example. But again, the intention is to get the highest quality product to the guest as quickly as possible. Point just being is, I think craft is a little bit of a slippery word, but certainly.
What does it mean? Like, what is being implied with craft cocktail? Or is it a bit of a vague definition?
I mean, I think most of these things are vague definitions.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a lot of quote unquote craft cocktail bartenders who hate the term mixologist, although it's a very old term. It's not just something that somebody coined recently, right? So I'm not sure. What I would say is it probably alludes to use of artisanal products, being educated on classic techniques and preparation, you know, high attention to detail. Again, the intention being that you produce a delicious beverage for the guest as the outcome. But it's interesting too, because I've been, and of course I pay attention to kind of industry news, and there's a lot of people who are predicting that in 2016 there's going to be more attention to hospitality, because there's been this kind of like notion that craft cocktail bars have, you know, they're just very snobby and unaccepting. And so people want to see, they still want to see the highest quality drink, but in the context of having this really great hospitality experience as well. So again, I think there's a whole bunch of different components. And so maybe at the end of next year, what we see is people say craft cocktails are delicious cocktails that are produced in an environment that's hospitable and welcoming. You know, I mean, it could change that much.
The reputation of the Brooklyn server.
yeah.
Difficult and ornery.
Yeah.
Do you have 20 years of experience, do you have any pet peeves when you go into a bar, things that you see?
I would say that my number one pet peeve, and I actually think so, back way at the beginning of this process, so this is probably like 7 months ago, I was on Damon Bolte's show, The Speakeasy, also on Heritage Radio Network, and I think I mentioned this pet peeve then too, but I really, really hate it when people say, when you walk in as a solo, Even if you're meeting people there, if you walk in by yourself, when people say just one, because then, you know, it just makes you kind of feel bad. Even if you've got a, you know, whole troop of people coming in, it just makes you feel less welcome. So that's one. Beyond that, I think it's pretty, it just depends on the situation. I would say besides that, no.
That's very diplomatic. I'm trying to think. I don't have any specific bar. I'm trying to think of like bar habits, mm-hmm. But it really comes down to the hospitality and the interaction with mm-hmm. the staff and what's going on. In the world of you know, beverage and cocktails, there's certain ways to do, you know, make a drink. Certain mm-hmm. recipes that shouldn't be deviated from. I was actually speaking with Damon not too long mm-hmm. ago, and we were just talking about his pet peeves as a bartender. I think, someone coming in and not looking at the menu and mm-hmm. then just ordering their regular drink.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that like, you can't have your normal drink, mm-hmm. but it is, you know, what's the point of seeking out a different place or, sure. or an interesting menu if it's not going to mm-hmm. be considered or... Mm-hmm. enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, I could see both sides of that. I guess, like, I am somebody that I'm sometimes I want a change of scenery, but you know, I might want
but you still want your drink.
Maybe I want my Miller High Life. I don't know, you know? So I don't personally have, you know, have an issue with that. I'm just trying to think from like, from my bartender perspective. Oh, this is probably totally illegitimate as a gripe, but when I was bartending, I did kind of take issue when people would say, they would come in and they wouldn't look at the menu and they would say, make me something special. And then you say, oh, you know, on the menu or off the menu, and they say off the menu. And this is, so for example, the last place that I bartended, I was bartending part-time at Booker and Dax. Dave Arnold also has a show here, Cooking Issues. He's the owner and the brain behind that. But that would happen where, because his methodology is so rigorous, you know, we'd spend weeks doing every iteration.
Yeah, if you guys aren't familiar with Booker and Dax, maybe you want to give a little background on the concept of that bar, because it's a little bit different than an average corner bar. Dave Arnold is the author of Liquid Intelligence also. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's a really, I guess I would say, chemistry approach.
Yeah, like I would say
or technically, process-driven. Yeah,
technically and method-driven cocktail bar. It's on 13th Street and 2nd Avenue in Manhattan. And yeah, it's, I mean, the precision is unparalleled in the industry. So, you know, many of the recipes call for like 2 drops of saline, for example. And there's like, again, the various types of methods using, you know, liquid nitrogen to chill glasses down so the stem doesn't get cold, but the bowl of the glass does. Like, these elements are very unusual in this industry. And so one of the things that he would have us do is, again, for each recipe, everybody on the team would taste it, and then you would go and try other methods of flavor extraction to get the optimal, again, end product. And so that was definitely something that I would take issue with when people would say, make me something special, when I definitely want to make them something special, but the chances of me just whooping something out and coming up with something better on the spot was unlikely, because again, there's so much time and effort that went into every recipe that's on that menu, and they do a phenomenal job. So again, I have the utmost respect for them. And again, I don't actually blame the guests for it at all. They definitely want something special, but I think the folks who would ask for that just didn't understand that there was that much effort that went into the development.
Yeah, so it's not a fault of theirs, but there is a lot of consideration that goes into a beverage program that I think if you don't have experience in the restaurant industry and you don't have experience at bars, you don't realize that this is, you know, really considered. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times, especially as Americans, who without a strong, you know, cultural, you know, food foundation, or, you know, it's not like Europe where for centuries, you know, something has been made this way. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of understanding or, you know, consideration, mm-hmm. I think, for what we're drinking, which is mm-hmm. what has been the, what I've known of the craft movement in the last 5 years.
Sure.
It's really just kind of been a new consideration mm-hmm. of what we're drinking, what we're enjoying with food, pairing.
Totally.
All of that.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I find to be really interesting, and obviously you and I had spoken about this a little bit off the air, but, you know, for me, this is like a constantly, you know, it's an iterative process. It's a constantly evolving concept as a business. I'm really interested in what's going on in the food world right now. So, for example, like food tech, like meal delivery. So like HelloFresh and Blue Apron and Marley Spoon and a whole bunch of these other guys, they are really doing something super interesting. They're taking like a very analog product or industry like food. Again, you need a certain amount of time to grow certain produce and to raise animals. They're taking this and they're expediting people's access to it, or they're improving that entire experience around acquiring that food product. So I think that's super interesting. And in my dream world, this is a direction that Swig and Swallow will go in. I'm really interested in, again, how this works with consumers, not just business to business, and understanding that there's, you know, risks and potential pitfalls there as well. But I am really interested in saying, well, what if, you know, all these people who are drinking drinks but are ordering the, again, high fructose corn syrup, ready to serve, whatever cocktail, you know, what if all of these people had access to again, fresh ingredients, and maybe it's something where it's we source locally whenever possible. You know, so serving the New York area, it's like we have on a weekly basis or on a monthly basis, we have, you know, 5 different classic cocktails that you can always order, and then maybe 2 or 3 signature cocktails that we're highlighting the, you know, a local farm that's providing. I don't know. Empire State is obviously known for apples. So, you know, whatever that product is. Apples is actually a horrible example because providing fresh apple
juice. TriStar strawberries.
Yeah. Let's just say I didn't use that as an example. But the point is that there could be a really interesting opportunity to actually provide very light education and exposure to, again, the environment around us and the food systems around us. So I'm really interested in exploring, you know, exploring if that is an option for what we're doing.
I remember a conversation that you and I had months back when I first met you and was introduced to this idea, mm-hmm. was that everything that you make can be enjoyed with or without mm-hmm. alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not strictly, you know, a booze delivery service,
sure.
but it's mm-hmm. standalone good.
Yep. So, yeah, this is one I a little bit lost that battle to myself. not that I'm not interested in doing that, but so what I was trying to do before, and this was again when I came on Damon's show, I was talking about craftmocktails.com, which was my other project, which was like it was not a money making project. It was just me coming up with different mocktail recipes and styling them as cocktails, and executing them. So, you know, shaking them or muddling or whatever, as you would a normal standard cocktail, and just really trying to say, okay, a mocktail is not just a margarita without tequila. Right. So I was exploring with that a lot. And one of the challenges that I came onto, is that with all of these, with pretty much every classic cocktail that has juice in it, there is a counterpart, like a sweet counterpart to mm-hmm. that. And so I haven't found the optimal sweet component that is the best for you, because I'm actually, as a personal interest, I'm very health-driven. I haven't found the optimal way to incorporate a sweet element and make it a really balanced cocktail and make it really healthy for you. So I have kind of like two lives right now. One is where I'm making, you know, juicing all of these, you know, vegetable and fruit juices. And then I'm also making cocktails that have more standard ratios with, again, sours ratio. So spirit, yeah. citrus sweet component, and then various other flavoring elements.
I just thought it was a very interesting approach to have essentially an ingredient-driven drink, you mm-hmm. know, and because when you're trying, you know, developing things as standalones and then using those ingredients also, like you said, fresh squeeze, that's not something that you had before mm-hmm. or someone doing at home.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a bunch of different ways I think you could also look at getting both of the intention of getting nutritionally rich juices to the clientele, as well as what would be considered to be delicious, balanced, crowd pleasing. That's maybe the best way to say crowd pleasing cocktails. So there's a few different ways to look at that. One, you'll see, again, I think media is always looking for different ways to blow up different trends. And so you'll see a lot of people saying health cocktail, and it's a normal cocktail with like kale juice in it. Right. So that's one.
Yeah. Does that need to exist? Can we accept our vices for just being, not everything has to be, you know, it's okay for something to be delicious.
So that is, I think that's why I kind of like lost the battle to myself when I was debating both sides of this. One thing I did think about is, so should I launch to consumers, which I do hope to do in the very near future, should I launch to consumers, and should there be a subscription model, which I'm still not convinced is the best direction to go in. But if that were the case, I've been approached by a ton of people who have office parties every single week. And they say, you know, it's normal.
I want to work at that office.
I know. And in fairness, many of these have been like catering companies, right? Okay. So they have a tie-in to this world already. But it did occur to me that it could be kind of cool to just test out the idea of saying, okay, your subscription is Monday you receive, you know, fresh cold pressed juices for the office. So everyone starts off on a really like, you know, energized note. And then Friday, the delivery is, you know, the batch for your cocktails. So I'm not sure either. I just have no idea.
Working through ideas. That's the challenge, the struggle, and the excitement of starting a new business and, you know, being an entrepreneur. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk more beverage with April Wachtel.
Let's play a game. If I say three words, let's say Brooklyn, classic, food. You tell me what comes to mind. I'll give you a second. If the answer wasn't Junior's, you lose the game. You can't possibly be a Brooklyn foodie, or a foodie at all for that matter, and not know about Junior's. Founded by Harry Rosen in 1950, Junior's landmark restaurant is known as the home of New York's best cheesecake. Real talk, you have not fully lived unless you've had Junior's Cheesecake. The original location in Brooklyn on Flatbush Avenue is still thriving, or you can check them out at recent landmark additions in New York's Grand Central Terminal or in the heart of the Theater District on Broadway and Times Square. Check out their first restaurant outside of New York at the Fox Tower Hotel at Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut. It's not just cheesecakes. They've got steak, seafood, sandwiches, salad, everything you would possibly need to complete an authentic New York dining experience. Don't be embarrassed next time somebody asks you if you've been to Junior's. Visit juniorscheesecake.com for more information.
Welcome back to The Main Course. I'm Alexis McLaughlin. We are here with April Wachtel. We are talking about beverage, drinks, booze, cocktails. Also, she's founder and CEO of Swig and Swallow. So kind of going into, you know, the challenges of getting a new business off the ground. That really brings me to something that I wanted to ask you earlier. How is it abandoning an idea? How does that, it's got to hurt a little bit to, you know, think about a trajectory, want to go somewhere, and then just it doesn't work out. The market just doesn't need or isn't looking for that thing right now. You know, that's, you just were talking about, you know, the iterative nature.
Yeah. Well, I would say that, so I guess a little background. So the Craft Mocktails was where this idea started. And I think it was easier, it was easy for me to start that and with the, never having the intention of making it a profitable business. It was just experimentation. Because again, I personally was not sold on all the aspects of this project. Even though I think there's value there, I wasn't sold that it was the right idea. So I think had I launched that with the intention of making money and then it didn't work out, I'm sure I would have felt crushed. You know, like, that sucks. But because it kind of, like, a couple of elements of that project folded into this one, that has been great. And it doesn't feel like a loss. It just feels like the starting point.
Yeah.
I would say that, you know, when I started Swig and Swallow, I definitely underestimated, even though I've not invested that much money in this, I underestimated how much money you should have to start a business. Like, you really, I'm 1,000% sure you need a bunch of money to make to make less money than you started off with. Like, I'm quite convinced of this. So I think that my assumption about how quickly I would just be rolling in the dough was, like, definitely off. And so I can't actually see this particular thing failing in the near future because there is demand for it. It's just, is there enough demand to justify my time? I think that is the question that you're probably referencing and that everybody who ever starts a business has to think about. And so I think for this, again, I know that there's demand. I know that I am really excited about where this has evolved to thus far and where it's going. So I would say that if I work on this for another year and I just feel like it's not ultimately as worth my time as I thought it was when I started, then that's something that I'm going to have to just have that honest conversation with myself and just say, you know what, it's going to be time to move on. But in the moment, it still feels right.
Yeah. And, but you know, the flexibility of being able to kind of, you know, not change direction 180, mm-hmm. but be able to just kind of, you know, move around and follow the trends and respond mm-hmm. to the feedback that you're getting, because it's so often you have an idea and if for a stubborn person, it can be very difficult to let mm-hmm. go, to not see that as a failure mm-hmm. when it's not necessarily a failure, but it could just be feedback that you can do something better or change the direction.
Right.
You know, just slightly where you're going.
So we talked about this a little before, but I've watched way too much Shark Tank, right? Like, it's not actually good for me for a whole bunch of reasons. But one of the things that you do hear come up in their conversations all the time is resiliency and stubbornness. And frankly, kind of unrealistic optimism. Like, if you're an entrepreneur, by definition, you're doing something that has not been done before or has not been done that well before. There's something that's in theory distinguishing you from other people, right? And that means that it is untested. And that means that there is a likelihood you're going to fail and you're going to have to confront that. And I think when you look at successful entrepreneurs, like, I know you had Greg from Tesmes.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was saying he was just really freaking stubborn and he just would not give up. And I think that's something that, like, I can definitely be a sensitive person, but I also am, like, incredibly resilient. So, like, I might get upset about something, but then in, like, 10 minutes, I'm like, well, I gotta move on, you know? So I think that is, like, you have to have that or else you'll never pursue your idea, because none of this stuff is, in theory, easy.
Yeah.
You know?
And if you knew better, that's what I always joke with Heritage. If we knew better,
right.
And if we were thinking about it
right.
from an intelligent place, we wouldn't be doing this.
Right.
But it's the passion
right.
that has kept it going.
And that's, I mean, frankly, that's the exciting thing too.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, I think, when, you know, when I left my last couple of jobs, I was really, I was fortunate in both of those jobs. I was working with Bacardi and then a company called Solvayso. I was really fortunate in both of those context to be able to test out ideas that I had, because people, you know, believed in me, or because they didn't have better alternatives, or, you know, whatever it was. Like, I don't even know that. I don't know. But that was really great, because I got to have ideas and say, well, this is, I think this translates, or I think this interprets, like, the brand image or strategy really well, and therefore I'm going to throw this event in this particular way. And so that was really great. And that, I think, gave me a lot of confidence that I could do this on my own as well. And the interesting added element here is that since I haven't raised money for this whatsoever, and since I've, between this and the other consulting work that I do, that's been, you know, this has been my livelihood. It's not like a trust fund baby, right? So I've been making this work as a financial option for myself as well. That forces you to become really creative and, again, hopefully derive a lot of joy from the learning that comes with this as well, you know, because if you didn't, you'd be screwed.
Yeah. Tough learning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you tell everyone where they can find you if they're interested in kind of, you know, exploring this idea a little bit more, getting in contact with Swig and Swallow if you have an upcoming party.
Yes. So, all right. So my contact is april@swigandswallow.com. I would also love, if anyone has any ideas or who wants this as a consumer, it would be amazing if you could just tweet at me. My Twitter handle is April_Wachtel, which is WACHTEL. Also, if you have Instagram, I started just about a week ago, I started a little social media campaign just trying to kind of connect the dots for people between batches that we provide and what this actually looks like in cocktail form. So if you're on Instagram, it's SwigAndSwallow is the handle there. And it would be awesome if you, again, could comment or follow me. That would be great too. Or if you have just stuff to share, I of course love to see that stuff as well. But that's my contact info. And the website is swigandswallow.com.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
I look forward to talking to you again. Hopefully we'll have you back on in the next next season and kind of check back in and see where it's at. And we should bring some cocktails for the studio.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I actually should have told you that for Emily Peterson's Sharp and Hot, I actually did make a couple of cocktails on air with the batch. So next time. Yeah. Yeah.
Liz will enjoy it. Thank you so much for listening. I know we're outside of our donation this season, but it was a very successful year. If you can always donate to Heritage Radio Network, which is a member-sustained organization, just go to the heart at the top of the page. And thank you guys so much for listening. Happy Sunday.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.